Everyone learns a language for different reasons. Maybe you want to watch K-dramas without subtitles or talk with family members in their native language. Your life is unique. Your language learning should be too. Rosetta Stone, the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, just launched Rosetta Stone Sapphire, a new app that combines its proven immersion method with the latest innovation and technology to help you learn faster, personalize your lessons, and have more fun along the way. Most language apps teach the same generic topics. Sapphire helps you focus on what you actually want to talk about, whether that's travel, family, work, or your favorite hobbies. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. You'll get unlimited access to all 25 Rosetta Stone languages, plus all the new Sapphire learning tools. Visit rosettastone.com/audio to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/audio and start learning a language for real.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end. Nibbles, gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Furniture shopping can be overwhelming. There are so many options, and it's hard to know what's actually worth it. That's why I always turn to reviews to guide my decisions. If something has hundreds of five-star reviews, I'm paying attention. And Bob's Discount Furniture has tons of highly rated pieces that make choosing a whole lot easier. Like their Elm Dining Set, which has over 700 five-star reviews. It's a gorgeous setup with a real marble table and comfortable Bobapedic seating that instantly upgrades your dining space. And at $9.99, it's a super approachable way to get that high-end look. Or check out Bob's Copper Radiance Queen Extra Firm Mattress. Over 400 five-star reviews and recommended by Consumer Reports. It's designed with a copper-infused cover and high-density Bobapedic foam for support. Plus, it comes with a 20-year warranty. And if you're looking for a sofa upgrade, the Modular Bob Sectional is a customer favorite with over 1,000 five-star reviews. It's got soft, durable upholstery, storage, wireless charging, and starts at just $250 per piece, so you can customize it without overthinking it. For quality furniture and everyday low prices, shop at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
What's going on, everybody? It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 275 on this Tuesday, June 2nd, 2026. Josh Calloway, Tom Green with you. Coming at you on a Tuesday because OU Baseball won their regional yesterday. So we moved the show back and wow. We'll get into it. A shocking weekend for Oklahoma and Atlanta. They're going to the Supers for the first time since their CWS run in 2022. We will recap it all and look ahead to the Super Regional matchup with Kansas coming up later this week. And we have some football stuff, a little bit of housekeeping items coming out of SEC spring meetings that we'll also touch on as well on the show today. We're into June. The summer has arrived. And OU Baseball is still planned. So be sure to subscribe. Be with us over at oklahoma.247sports.com. Use the promo code SoonersPod60. That'll get you 60% off a VIP membership to Sooners Illustrated and the entire 24/7 Sports Network. Obviously, baseball is still rolling. Camp season has arrived at the high school level for OU football. Recruiting is starting to really ramp up. Colin and Brody have been all over it. And obviously, media day is just about a month away and fall camp coming up. So be with us as Sooners Illustrated throughout the summer, getting you ready for next season and all that good stuff over the next few months. All right, let's get into it. Tom, let's start with baseball. We don't really get to lead with baseball all the time as we talk baseball regularly on the show throughout the season, but this was worthy of it. A stunning weekend for Oklahoma in Atlanta. They win the Atlanta Regional. They upset number two Georgia Tech over the weekend. Where to begin? There's so much to digest from this. Just an all-time kind of out-of-nowhere weekend for an OU team that I've ever covered in any sport. Just kind of like, where did that come from? You know, we talked about it last week going into the tournament. Obviously, we got the draw on Monday, and this was kind of the worst case scenario, right? To go to Atlanta to play the number two team in America and a historically great offense. We talked about that last week. This Georgia Tech team, the numbers they put up offensively this year, they don't even look real. Like, it's unbelievable what they did this season. You add on to the fact, on top of that already being difficult, you add on to the fact that OU got dealt a really rough hand with the weather. They had to play four games in 2 days on Saturday and Sunday, and then still turn around and play Georgia Tech again in a winner-take-all game on Monday. They're down 8-2 on Sunday facing elimination. They're down 7-3 on Monday facing elimination, and they find a way through them both. Tom, I know you were plugged into the game yesterday watching. You were with me in the game thread. Just, again, there's so much to digest. There's so many things I could bring up and talk about. But just boiling it down to yesterday, to come back from four runs down in the seventh, push it to extras, win it in extras on the Dayton Taki walk-off, wow. Just a truly stunning and amazing weekend for this program, and quite an achievement to get back to the Super Regionals and get through the number two team in America.
Yeah, I mean, it was an uphill climb, especially after, you know, you win that opening game and then you lose to Georgia Tech and have to kind of claw your way back in a very condensed schedule because of that weather. Like, that is, you know, really remarkable playing, what was it, four games
in 2 days and then Monday. Yeah. So five and three. Yeah.
Yeah. Like five games in like 60 hours is to be able to emerge from that against a, you know, one of the best teams in the country, the number two national seed, is truly impressive. And I think this conversation needs to start with the man of the hour, Dayton Taki.
Mm-hmm.
First off, that home run was just an absolute no doubter, crushed that thing to center field. I think we were texting about it, you know, late in the game, but it's like, man, if Oklahoma can't pull this out, like, Dayton Taki's going to be kicking himself.
Right.
You know, he had that throwing error during that big inning that Georgia Tech had. And then, you know, a little bit of base running blunder, but also just a little bit of bad luck.
A little bit of bad luck.
You know, getting doubled up on that line out in the eighth inning, where it looked like Oklahoma was really going to rally and maybe be able to string some runs together, and to end the inning like that. And if you're him, you're like, man, if your season ends and those are like two of the most like pivotal plays in the game, it's going to be a long offseason for you. But he comes up with his opportunity in the 10th inning and just obliterates that ball.
Moonshot.
To send Oklahoma to the Super Regional. And, you know, it was really cool. They were showing his mom in the stands as he's rounding the bases. And, you know, he didn't know that she was going to be there this weekend. So, real cool moment for them, obviously. But credit to him for not getting down on himself after, you know, two very tough breaks earlier in the game that could have cost Oklahoma, and then to emerge as a hero for them.
He also had the foul ball off a sensitive area that,
yeah,
I mean, looked horrific. And to come up later in the game and to do that, you know, the Taki thing is unbelievable, because this is a guy that last year was having an awesome season, and he, you know, breaks his ankle, tried to come back at the end of the year. It didn't. I mean, that was a big part of what kind of, I don't say tanked their season, because they still made a regional final last year, but it really hurt them down the stretch last year. He wasn't the same guy this year. You know, he essentially was benched for a long while. I mean, there was a big portion of the middle of the year where he did not get playing time. They were doing a lot of LeChance at first and Brock catching. And Taki, you know, just kind of had to bide his time. Toward the end of the year, they decided to kind of go back to him. Skip Johnson talked about it. When they played Tennessee at the Brick, right? They were at the very end of the regular season, where they kind of made a decision of like, let's just go back. Let's kind of like start over. Let's go back to our opening weekend lineup and kind of go from there. And that obviously included Dayton Taki at first base. And he's been great. He's been great. He had a huge regional, and he hits that home run. And like you said, his mom is in tears. I mean, just an all-time moment. And a great call from Toby Rowland. He talked it off, which is awesome as well. And just incredible. I mean, to be down 7-3 and then down 8-2 on Sunday night, facing elimination in both instances on the road against, by some accounts, the best team in the sport this year. I mean, the number two seed, depending on who you ask, among the very, very top favorites to win the whole thing going into the tournament. The very top. And to go do it is unbelievable. Dayton LeChance continues to be unbelievable. He has been just insane. I've covered guys who have had better seasons, obviously, than what Dayton LaChance has done, but I cannot recall a heater quite this good and for this long. We talked about it the last couple of weeks. He had no home runs entering the month of April. He has 14 now, and it's every day. He hits a grand slam on Sunday night that was obviously massive. It took a three-run deficit, put OU in the lead. Hits another two-run homer yesterday. He's been absolutely phenomenal. He was named the most outstanding player of the regional. And then, you know, I don't want it to go overlooked, and I tweeted about it last night. I thought Skip Johnson had himself quite a weekend. I know, like, he's going to get a lot of praise because the team won and all that. That's obvious. But he pushed the right buttons all weekend with the pitching staff. And it's a really tough spot. When you have to cover five games in 3 days, you have to, you know, that takes some serious managing of the game. And he was, I mean, he made some bold decisions and they largely all worked out. I mean, you go with Cord Rager on the opener, he pitched great. You go with Xander Mercurius, another freshman against Georgia Tech. They didn't win that game, but he gave him a chance, and he gave him length, which is huge because it all plays into the next game. You know, you set yourself up for the next game, and one game bleeds into the next. He goes with Nick Weslowski, another freshman with the season on the line. He was great, and they win. He goes with Cam Johnson. He doesn't have it, but he makes the quick hook after 12 pitches, goes to his closer, Jackson Cleveland. He kept them in the game and gave him that chance to come back later. And then yesterday, obviously, he goes with Michael Catalano, who pitches three solid innings, and then he just navigated it all so well. I mean, in a really tough spot, it just, again, pushing all the right buttons all weekend. LJ Mercurius was sensational out of the bullpen. Obviously, he had a kind of a weird year where he was so good early, lost his spot in the rotation. He's in the bullpen now, and he was phenomenal this weekend out of the bullpen, gave him some huge innings in relief. And it's just, there's so much that, again, to digest from it all. I really thought that the time off really paid off a lot for Oklahoma. It seemed like they went into this weekend and really played like they didn't care, like in a good way, though, like not in a whatever, we're done, we've given up, but just kind of in a nobody's picking us to win. We ended the season really poorly. Let's just go roll it out there and kind of see what happens. They played very loose and free baseball. They did not make many mistakes. I mean, you're never going to play perfect, but for the most part, they played really clean defense. They pitched well. They continue to mash the baseball. If they continue to score like this, they're going to be a tough out, obviously, because they're hitting the ball everywhere right now. And, yeah, I mean, to come through and win this regional, one of the more impressive, like, one-weekend achievements, you know, that I can recall from any OU sports team, and just out of nowhere. What a heck of a weekend for Oklahoma to do it. And, yeah, I mean, any final thoughts on the – I mean, just it's incredible. I mean, really – still kind of sitting here the next day like, man, I can't believe they won that. It's crazy.
Probably. Yeah, just wanted to add on to the Jackson Cleveland of it all. You mentioned what he was able to do Sunday, and then to come in yesterday, on Monday, you know, 3 2/3 scoreless innings of relief against, you know, one of the nation's best offenses.
That's right.
And to be able to do that in, you know, Oklahoma, you know, outscored Georgia Tech 10-0 from like the seventh inning on in those games. Like that's impressive. And it's a, you know, obviously the offense did its part, but for the bullpen to be able to manage that and hold that Georgia Tech offense in check the way it did and give the offense a chance, obviously on Monday, a chance to rally, on Tuesday, really to pull away scoring 13 unanswered runs, or not Tuesday, on Sunday to, yeah, scored 13 unanswered runs is really impressive.
And also, too, again, this is where I said before, there's so much. Don't also overlook Jackson Willits, the big hit to tie it in the ninth yesterday as well. I mean, like every guy on the roster had a moment this weekend, which you need. Right? I mean, to go win four games and to beat Georgia Tech twice, facing elimination both times, like you kind of need everyone to step up, like pretty literally everyone. And pretty much everyone did. Everyone had a hand in this. And so just awesome. Awesome for the program. Awesome for these guys. It was a really hard finish to the year. Obviously, it took a lot. Took it on the chin. You know, last month, Skip's taken it on the chin of, you know, from the last month with the way they pitched. And you lose your last four series. You go one and done in Hoover. Nobody's giving you a shot with this regional draw. And they just went out and they did it. And, you know, not for nothing, too, but this just kind of cool. I mean – the Oklahoma City Thunder didn't make the finals. OU softball is out. They didn't make the, like, a lot of eyes were on them this weekend that maybe normally wouldn't have been. And they went and they did it, you know, really cool. So quite an achievement. They're on to the Super Regionals for the first time since 2022, which is obviously when they went to the College World Series finals that year. And we talked about it last week. This is where now you get to benefit from the fact you just played number two and that you're playing number 15 Kansas this weekend for a spot in the College World Series in Omaha. Now, Kansas is really good, obviously, right? Anyone who is a host in a top 16 is really good. Kansas won the Big 12 regular season title. They also won the tournament. Okay, they earned being a host. They were one of the best teams in America all year long. For a long time, they were considered a national seed, a top eight. They were. And you looked at the projections back in April and into May, usually Kansas was right around that 7-8 mark. They ended up sliding to 15 by the time the bracket actually came out. But it's another really good team. It's another really good offense. Not to the Georgia Tech level, obviously, which was, again, like we said before, historically good this year. But Kansas can score. They can score runs. They hit home runs at a high clip as well. They also have a pretty darn good pitching staff. I think they're like top 50-ish, you know, in like strikeouts and some of those key pitching statistics, if you will. So it's not going to be easy by any means. You know, don't get me wrong, but you're going up to Lawrence. It's going to be a crazy scene. They had never hosted before in their history of their program, and they packed that place out. It's not a big ballpark, but they absolutely packed it out over the weekend. Most people were picking Arkansas to win that regional. Kansas knocked them off. And they're on, and now they're in the same spot, right? They're thinking, we have two games at home to get to the College World Series. This is quite a matchup this weekend. Tom, I don't expect you to know anything about Kansas, obviously, but just it's going to be very interesting to see how this goes. It's going to be Saturday night, game one, Sunday night, game two. If necessary, game will be on Monday. I am planning to make the trip up to Lawrence, which will be really cool, obviously. This is going to be very interesting. I'm very interested to see how Skip manages the pitching staff. Does he just run it back with the freshman again? Cord, Xander, and Weslowski, if there's a game three, I would be tempted to do so. But it should be a really fun series, and I'm very excited to get up there this weekend and see how this shakes out, because this is going to be just two programs that feel like they've found gold here, and they want to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Oklahoma, you're playing with house money at this point. Sure. Obviously, and any wins this weekend are huge. And if you can punch your ticket to Omaha, even better. But I'm curious to see how the pitching kind of whether they're able to carry some of that momentum that they were able to get from the bullpen and from some of those younger guys into this bigger stage, because it's only going to get tougher.
No doubt. Should be fun. Look forward to it. Again, Saturday night, 5 o'clock, first pitch there in Lawrence at Hogland Ballpark. And then Sunday's the same time. Monday's TBD for now. I'd imagine be somewhere in that same park if it's needed. Same time zone there if needed on Monday, and we'll have the coverage as soon as Illustrated. Be sure to be plugged in. More baseball to be played in the month of June. Why not? And who knows? Get it done. We might be talking about Omaha next week on this show. So we'll see. Crazy weekend though for OU baseball, and quite a moment for Skip in the program. They deserve it, and good stuff. The Sooners Illustrated podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
Everyone learns a language for different reasons. Maybe you want to watch K-dramas without subtitles or talk with family members in their native language. Your life is unique. Your language learning should be too. Rosetta Stone, the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, just launched Rosetta Stone Sapphire, a new app that combines its proven immersion method with the latest innovation in technology to help you learn faster, personalize your lessons, and have more fun along the way. Most language apps teach the same generic topics. Sapphire helps you focus on what you actually want to talk about, whether that's travel, family, work, or your favorite hobbies. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. You'll get unlimited access to all 25 Rosetta Stone languages, plus all the new Sapphire learning tools. Visit rosettastone.com/audio to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/audio and start learning a language for real.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end. Huh, Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Furniture shopping can be overwhelming. There are so many options, and it's hard to know what's actually worth it. That's why I always turn to reviews to guide my decisions. If something has hundreds of five-star reviews, I'm paying attention. And Bob's Discount Furniture has tons of highly rated pieces that make choosing a whole lot easier. Like their Elm dining set, which has over 700 five-star reviews. It's a gorgeous setup with a real marble table and comfortable Bobapedic seating that instantly upgrades your dining space. And at $9.99, it's a super approachable way to get that high-end look. Or check out Bob's Copper Radiance Queen Extra Firm Mattress. Over 400 five-star reviews and recommended by Consumer Reports. It's designed with a copper-infused cover and high-density Bobapedic foam for support. Plus, it comes with a 20-year warranty. And if you're looking for a sofa upgrade, the Modular Bob Sectional is a customer favorite with over 1,000 five-star reviews. It's got soft, durable upholstery, storage, wireless charging, and starts at just $250 per piece, so you can customize it without overthinking it. For quality furniture and everyday low prices, shop at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
All right, let's shift to some football stuff. We have a few kind of housekeeping items. Obviously, we're in the dog days. It's summer. It's June. So we're just kind of looking ahead toward the season a little bit. I'm kicking myself. I got sidetracked with baseball. I forgot to, we've begun the countdown. It's 95 days until kickoff today. SEC meetings were last week in Destin. Few, again, housekeeping items coming out of that. Let's start with the fact that Brent Venables gave us some rare positive news injury-wise, or at least welcomed, I guess, positive news injury-wise. David Stone, Jaden Jackson, Torrey Blaylock, Xavier Robinson, all good to go per Brent Venables. They are full health for the summer, which obviously would indicate they'll be ready to hit the ground running in fall camp. These are all guys, Tom, that missed, obviously, spring ball. Not that anyone was freaking out about necessarily any of them, but, you know, just good to hear that everyone's in good place. No setbacks that we're aware of, obviously, for these four guys, all healthy, all hitting the ground running. Just a nice, if you're an OU fan, to make you feel a little better about things here in the early part of June.
Yeah, and they were all pretty much expected. Like, none of these guys had anything significant. It was, you know, David Stone and Jaden Jackson and Torrey Blaylock, like, were basically held out of spring because they had some cleanup stuff in the offseason from injuries that they played through during last season. I think the one that is, I don't want to say surprising, but one that is probably gives you the most optimism is the Xavier Robinson being cleared to go, just because, you know, it was a calf strain. And, you know, we've seen what can happen with some of these athletes when, you know, they rush back from a calf strain or it's mistreated in some way. Like, that is how you end up with an Achilles tear. Like, we've seen that happen way too much in the NFL and the NBA these last couple of years, where guys just, you know, aren't quite 100% when they come back from that calf strain, and they push it and it results in a much more serious injury.
Sure.
So, you know, for them to be able to handle the Xavier Robinson thing, which happened the first week or so of spring practices, get him in a good spot where he gets a clean bill of health and he's ready to come back and attack these summer workouts, I think is big for them. Because, again, you know, he was one of your top two running backs last season. Sure. And, you know, being able to bring him and Torrey Blaylock back, you know, when they both played through injury last year, and, you know, we've discussed how, you know, how poor the running game was overall, but those two guys were bright spots when they were able to tough it out. And I think we fully expect the run game to be much improved this year. Obviously, they've added some pieces to that room to push those guys and really try to complement them and elevate the run game. But those two guys obviously are going to need to make, you know, steps themselves now that they're healthy to kind of get that run game on track this fall.
Yeah, I agree. I think the running backs are the more important update of the two. Obviously, I mean, Stone and Jackson, we've talked about, are right in the conversation with the two best players on the team. I mean, as far as what's expected of them and what we think that they can be this year. But I think we talked about throughout the spring, I think there was definitely always kind of a thought and a belief that these two guys, they're being really cautious. Like they're putting them in bubble wrap. They don't need the spring per se. Like, and they need to kind of develop some of these other D tackles. Like they're being really, really careful with Stone and Jackson. Whereas, you know, X-Rob and Blaylock, there's a little bit of that, obviously, but these are guys that were hurt during the season too. I mean, they were beat up down the stretch of the year. Really, the second half of the season, both guys were just toughing it out. And so you add on to the fact that, like, oh man, they're also missing the spring. Like, are they just going to be dinged up? Like, you want to hear that they're in a good spot because, you know, you're going back to midseason last year. It's like they've kind of been hurt for several months now. So to hear that they're in a good spot is huge. And I think this is a big summer for Troy Blaylock, which will spin into what we're going to talk about here in a second. But, like, you know, had a nice freshman year. Can he put a little bit more weight on to kind of be able to withstand? Obviously, that's not a problem for X-Rob. He's huge. But for Troy Blaylock, like, you know, year two is a definite opportunity to make a big jump. So to miss the spring kind of stings. So hopefully he can take advantage of the summer and get ready for fall camp here coming up. So definitely just nice to hear some positive indications on four guys that are all going to be obviously huge for Oklahoma coming up in 2026. I just mentioned it, but it got me thinking kind of this whole conversation with like the summer and being healthy for the summer. You got any guys in particular that jump out to you that need to take advantage of the summer? You know, I just mentioned one in my mind, it being Troy Blaylock. Just missed the spring, had a good freshman season, but was beat up. Can he put a little more weight on? Can he get kind of, you know, more refined, ready to try and make a year two jump for him? He's certainly one that jumps out to me. There are a few others. What to you, if anyone? I mean, it's the summer, right? So you're talking about conditioning, working on timing, potentially with John Mateer, if it's a, you know, in the passing game or whatever. But it's kind of a key stretch. You can really tell when you get to fall camp kind of who took advantage of the summer sometimes and who didn't. Who needs to take advantage of the summer for you?
Yeah, for me, you know, there's a few guys on each side of the ball, and a lot of it comes down to guys that were, you know, limited or missed time in the spring. I'll start on the offensive side of the ball. For me, it's Trell Harris and Parker Livingston.
100%. Yeah.
Like, you know what you have in Isaiah Satania, all-SEC receiver last year, obviously a very strong rapport with John Mateer. But, you know, you revamped that wide receiver room to upgrade the pieces around John Mateer. And you bring in Trell Harris, who was an all-ACC selection of Virginia last year. You bring in Parker Livingston from Texas. And, you know, both those guys, you know, Trell basically didn't really practice this spring because I think it was a little hamstring cleanup he had, if I remember correctly. And then Parker was limited some. We saw him in the spring game a little bit. But to get those guys at 100% and get them where they're, you know, running routes and getting on the same you know, timing with John Mateer, I think is huge, especially if you want this offense to be, you know, humming out of the gate and in a position to where, you know, you can go to Michigan in week two and get a big non-conference win before gearing up for SEC play in, you know, late September. I think getting those guys on the same page and getting their timing down with John Mateer is huge. And on a similar note, and I have less concern about this one, but Owen Heineke, obviously, yeah, did not practice throughout the spring while his eligibility was up in the air. He was out there. He was taking all the mental reps. You know, he was helping coach some of these guys through certain aspects of, you know, Brent Venables' defense and, you know, how Nate Dreiling works with the linebackers. But for him to get back out there on the field and get on the same page and get, you know, continue to build the relationship that he had with Kip Lewis that he built over the second half of last season when he emerged as a starter, I think will be huge for this defense because, like we talked about entering the spring, you know, that linebacker depth was a big question. Now it's obviously a lot less of a concern with Owen Heineke getting that extra year of eligibility and you're able to rotate, you know, him and Kip and Cole Sullivan as like your top three linebackers. But, you know, it's been a while since, you know, Owen Heineke's gotten some, you know, game-like reps because he was, you know, while he was battling that whole eligibility thing, he was, yeah, you know, still focusing on, you know, a potential NFL career. So I think it's important for him to maximize the summer. I have no doubt that he will. I just wanted to mention him.
No, that's a good call. And I thought of him too, for the same reason. You know, you missed the spring and also you do all the work on his own. He was getting ready for NFL draft and stuff. So it's not like he's been sitting around doing nothing, right. But it is different to be with the team and to try and make sure you don't miss a step. And obviously the expectation is Heineke will obviously be a huge part of this thing this fall. I agree totally on Livingston and Harris. They're probably the first two guys I thought of. Because, I mean, we're just expecting these guys to be huge parts of the offense. They didn't really get to work with John Mateer that much. So, you know, we know that Mateer, he's talked about as much. stays in Norman in the summer. He's not going anywhere. If those guys are around and willing to put in the effort and the time with John, I'm quite certain that he will be down to get out and throw. And that stuff matters, right? Just building up that chemistry and that rapport, that stuff really, really matters. And I mean, really every non-Isaiah Cetania wide receiver, you could say that for as well. I mean, Elijah Thomas, Manny Choice, Mackenzie Aline, even after the spring he had to continue to, you know, build on it, obviously. The freshman, Jahzir Rogers, Jaden Petit, like all these guys should be absolutely doing everything they can this summer to get bigger, stronger, faster, and to work with Mateer as much as they can, right? And if not Mateer, Bentley, whatever. I mean, any quarterback can get out there just to take advantage of it, because there's opportunities to be had there at the wide receiver spot after that top line. So definitely agree there. Defensively, I really don't have much. I mean, I truthfully don't know where he is health-wise, but one that stuck out to me would probably be like a PJ Adebore, but I don't know where he is. Right. You know, Brent did not mention him in Destin, I don't think, unless I just missed it. And so, you know, where is he? Because he missed the spring, and this is a guy that going into year four, you're like, you know.
It's now or never.
Now or never, and like Danny Okoye is kind of jumping him, and it's like, you know, what does it look like? He missed the spring. So if he's healthy, and again, I don't really know where he's at health-wise. If he's healthy enough, though, to at least putting in, you know, a lot of time, I would imagine he is. But important stretch for him, I would say, because it's a, you know, kind of a make or break season for him, obviously, in Norman. And he had some really nice things last year. He had a nice season. But you're ready for him to jump up and be a star, which is what he was billed as, right? I mean, anytime you're a five star and that sort of thing. So I would think that this is a pretty important time for him. Health, you know, barring health, where he's kind of at in his recovery, obviously, after missing the spring. So we'll see. Important time, though, in the summer.
Yeah, I was going to say a few other guys that I think really need to maximize their time this summer are some of those, you know, fringe offensive linemen. Because, like, they feel really good about, you know, the top six, maybe seven. But, like, you need a Caleb Nita to really, you know, A, get healthy, and B, just like get settled, because you need that depth at center. Obviously, Noah Best got a lot of reps there during the spring as a true freshman, but you know, you don't want to necessarily have to count on a true freshman to step in if something happens to Jake Michael, God forbid. But guys like, you know, Peyton Joseph coming in, you know, where is he in his development as a guy who was, you know, really well thought of, but really didn't play much last year at Georgia Tech, and, you know, needing to get settled there at tackle, you know, Fred Hinton type, you know, maybe some of these younger guys, Deacon Schmidt, who's a guy that, you know, we think might be able to work his way into that too deep, like, you know, by midseason, by the end of the season or whatever. It's like, I think those are the players that really need to take advantage of this summer, because like we've talked about, this is a rare time for Oklahoma where they're going into this in the fall camp. They know what their offensive line is pretty much going to look like. Mm-hmm. Like it is like four of the five spots are pretty much set. It's like, just the question is it going to be Hito Zider? Is it going to be Ryan Foje, you know, getting that, those first reps at right guard right now is what it feels like. But the other four spots are like pretty solidified at this point. So they feel really good about those top six, maybe seven guys, but you need some of that depth, because that is the biggest question on this team right now. I think in my opinion, is just the top of the offensive line looks as good as it's ever been in recent years, but we've seen how quickly one injury, two injuries, guys miss a little bit of time, just can derail that whole situation.
And two, I agree with that totally. And two, I mean, it's extremely obvious, probably so obvious, it goes without saying, but John Mateer as well. I mean, obviously for Mateer, we talked about in the spring, you know, tweaking the throwing motion a little bit, getting a little more over the top, cleaning up the mechanics, the footwork. Obviously, it's hard decision-making in non-game-like settings, but, you know, the mental reps, if you will, that kind of cliche. We know John's an extremely hardworking dude. It's not like I'm saying anything that, you know, it's breaking any news with that. But I would think that John, this is an important stretch for him as well to continue to just work on that stuff, to make the jump that he wants to make, obviously, in his second year at Oklahoma. And obviously, he had a great spring by all accounts. And I would expect him to hit the ground extremely hard over the next few months, working with his receivers, as we mentioned before, to get ready for fall camp and obviously the season whenever we get there. So he's another one that's, you know, kind of goes without saying, but worth mentioning as well. All right, before we go, one other kind of housekeeping item coming out of SEC spring meetings I thought was fairly interesting. Both Brent Venables and Roger Denny, who of course was out there, Oklahoma's new AD, they talk about CFP expansion a little bit. And Roger had some interesting stuff on what it might mean for scheduling in the future, where he kind of was pretty non-committal toward continuing to schedule big out-of-conference games because it's not really there's this whole conversation right now about does it actually help or hurt you. Obviously, Texas has been championing that it hurt them last year, right, that if they didn't play Ohio State, they would have been in, that whole thing that everyone already knows. But obviously, Tom, you know, OU has always been willing to play big out-of-conference games. They've always done it under Joe Castiglione. Obviously, this year they go to Michigan. Like, that's nothing new. They are used to having a marquee non-conference game just about every year. Very rare that they don't. And Roger Denny was kind of, you know, again, he didn't really say anything one way or another. He was kind of non-committal on continuing to do that, you know, if it's not going to be rewarded, I think was kind of how he put it. Later in the year at the selection process, Brent Venables in very BV fashion kind of basically said, like, we don't care. We're going to win who we play. If it goes to 24 teams, cool. If not, whatever. Like, he always kind of – he's been very consistent with that over the years. Like, he's just kind of a let's go win every game we play, and then it doesn't matter how many teams we'll be in sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. What do you have to make of whether Brent or Denny, just kind of any of what they had to say? Some interesting stuff on the CFP kind of expansion. It's kind of a hot topic right now, and it certainly was – in Florida last week at the, you know, spring meetings.
Yeah, I think one of the things that was interesting is, like, while Brent, like, doesn't seem to have a preference one way or the other, obviously the American Football Coaches Association has kind of championed, like, being in favor of expansion, whether that is to 16 or to 24 teams. Brent is on the board for the AFCA right now. That doesn't necessarily mean it's his, you know, personally held opinion. Sure. That they need to expand, but an organization that he, you know, is well involved with is in favor of that. And while he may not publicly say what his preference would be, he acknowledged, like, look, it's not going to stay the same. Like, it feels inevitable that there's going to be expansion of some sort, whether that's to 16 teams, whether that's to 24, remains to be seen. But, like, we've seen it over the last decade. Like, it went from, you know, the BCS system where, you know, the computers choose the two teams at the top to play for the title, to you have the 14 playoff era, and now you're, you know, 2 years into the 12 team era, and what tweaks need to be done there. And it's like, it's going to change. Like, there's not going to be stagnation here. Something is going to change. We'll see whether it's 16 and 24. And then that brings us to the other point. The way Roger Denny made it sound to me is, if it stays at 12 teams for however long, I could see programs canceling some of these marquee non-conference games because it's a smaller field, smaller room for error. You know, we talked about what happened with Texas last year with the Ohio State game and that kind of being a sticking point for them. But if you expand to 24 teams, it gives you a little bit more room for error where you can highlight some of these big games early in the season. And it's not going to be, you know, probably not going to be a knock against you come, you know, November, December, just because, again, like, you know, Texas would have been in if it was 24 teams this year. You know, Vandy would have been in if it was 24 teams this year. You know, some of these other teams that lose these big non-conference games that they don't necessarily have to play outside of the fact that, like, the SEC requires its member institutions to play a Power Four non-conference team. Those won't be held against you. So I think if it expands to 24, I'd fully expect Oklahoma to keep scheduling these these big time non-conference games. Obviously, they have already got a few still ahead on the calendar.
Yeah.
A little bit down the line, you have Clemson.
Nebraska's coming back up.
Nebraska, SMU next year, I believe.
Next year, yeah.
So you have a few of those on. Yeah. I think Baylor might be on there at some point too. I can't recall. Maybe,
I know, like, San Diego State is on there if you want to count
that. Yeah, that's not a Power Four game though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But yeah, you have the Nebraska, you have the Clemson game, you have SMU, which is obviously an ACC school now. You have those on the calendar. The question is, like, will those stick if the CFP does not expand in the next few years? So we'll see. But I think, do I personally want it to expand to 24 teams? No,
I can ask you. What's your personal preference? I mean, I thought the 12 has been pretty cool, frankly. Yeah. I thought it's made the season kind of fun to have more teams in the mix. And I think the on-campus games, I think, are universally liked. I mean, they've been really, really cool. where are you at with it at right now at 12? I mean, it sounds inevitable it's going to go to 24. So right. It's kind of like a whatever, like it's going to happen. But if you were the czar of it, where would you, what do you think?
You know, I could see 16 teams working, but yeah. Like
24 seems a lot.
Yeah, I like the 12 right now though, because you're rewarding the, you know, like the top four seeds, you're rewarding mm-hmm. them with a bye. And it's like, as someone, I think someone on our board pointed out, it's like, it's a tiered system right now, kind of like the top four, like that top tier, they get a bye. That second tier, they get to host. That third tier, you're on the road. Like, maybe yeah. you guys shouldn't have been in this to begin with. Or like you're kind of that fringe outside, like the upper echelon of teams right now. I'd be curious to see like what would a 16 team bracket look like, because I would imagine you'd still want to reward buys for some of those teams, but like 16 is a very natural number where you can just do
right. Yeah, there would be, I wouldn't think
16, 8, yeah. 4, 2. So we'll see. I'd like to see it stick at 12 for at least a little while. You know, it's only been 2 years of that, and we're already talking about expanding it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we had a full decade of the 14 playoff.
Right.
Yeah, I think some of it is just people being too reactionary to kind of how things worked out these first couple of years with some of the seeds, some of the teams that missed the cut line. But I'd like to see it played out for a little bit before they make any actionable changes.
Yeah, I agree. I had kind of accepted this whole past season, like, it's probably going to go to 16. And you know what? I'm okay with that. Like, 16, you know, like I said, it's a nice round number. It doesn't bother me. It would allow everyone to have an on-campus game. So that's what kind of sucks about being a top four. You lose that. You get the bye, which is, and you take that, obviously. But everyone kind of wants that on-campus game because it's just such a cool thing for your fan to get the bonus home game and the environment of it, and, you know, bring theoretically a marquee opponent in. It's like kind of like a reward, a little mini in and of itself. And so I kind of like the 16. I kind of talked myself into like, it's going to happen, so it's no big deal. Like, I'm accepting of it. And now we're just throwing 24 out there, which seems to me to be too big. And look, it is what it is. I'm not going to watch. That's the thing. It's like, I'm going to watch it whenever we get there. But it seems a little large. But when you look at the bracket from last year, some of the teams that would have been in a 24 team, it's like, man, I don't know. Teams, you know, 20 to 24 don't really need to be in the bracket, but it seems inevitable. We'll see what happens. I think more on-campus games is good. I've been pro like get stuff on campus more and more and more. I mean, the bowl games are really cool for us. Selfishly, it's cushy from like a media perspective in NFL cities and NFL stadiums. Like that stuff's all great for us, but like for fans and for like the environments of these things, it's so much better on campus. Like, I've kind of been of the thought of like, I really like the way the women's tournament is in March Madness, where the first weekend is on campuses. I really like that. They'll never do it in the men, but I mean, to see like Fog or Rupp get to host, that would be unbelievable. And like, just look at what we just had in baseball with the regionals this weekend and those environments. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with having like a destination at the end, like Omaha or the Final Four or the like, but I'd like to see more earlier postseason games be on campus. And we're getting that in football a little bit. We've dabbled, but I kind of would like to see more. And so we'll see. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. But
yeah, I was going to say, speaking as someone who has like voted in the AP poll before, like, it's hard enough as it is. Like, when you're getting into the 20s, it's like, what teams need to fill out these last five, like, to expand the playoff to 24 teams? Or like, okay, does this team really need to be in here? Like, mm-hmm. like, what's the cutoff point? Like, between a, you know, like an 11-1 G5 school and a 9-3 SEC team or a 9-3 right. Big Ten team. Like, at some point, some of those teams don't need to necessarily be in the discussion for, you know, the national championship, when, you know, especially depending on what those losses look like. So I don't know. Like I said, it's inevitable. It feels like it's just a matter of like, what's it going to settle at, and for how long will it settle there?
Right. Gonna be interesting. We'll see. Like you said, it feels inevitable at some point, but
I will say the one thing that they need to change is like, they need to condense the postseason.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. They just released the schedule like the other day.
It's like mid-December is the first round, and then the national championship game is not until January 25th. Like,
January 25th, even though December 18th is when the quarterfinals start.
And no game on New Year's Eve this year.
Yeah.
Because of the NFL. Like they need to not be afraid of going head to head with the NFL with these TV ratings. It's like you're just hurting yourself with the scheduling by avoiding the NFL.
Yeah. And you know, the tricky thing too is the conference championship games. You know, the conferences aren't going to want to get rid of them because they make money and there's some level of tradition there. You know, people try to act like they've been around forever. It's like they're all kind of like relatively new thing. I mean, like the SEC is like in the 90s. Not like it's that new or that historic by any means. What would make a lot of sense would be to ditch those, obviously, because then you could just start the playoff even earlier and kind of get the ball rolling. And that's why we didn't mention it, but they've talked about moving the season up a week and starting when week zero is now, letting that be when week one always is, you know. And so I don't know. There's a lot more tweaks to come as they try to figure this thing out, but it's I'm with you there. There's no reason for the playoff to take a month and a half. Like that seems a little crazy, obviously, but we'll see. All right, I think that's it for now. Colin and I, probably Brody, I don't know, we'll have to check with him. We'll be back later this week to hit on some recruiting stuff. Been a big week of recruiting stuff already. Oklahoma, two big commits this week. They're back up to number one in the team rankings at 24/7 Sports, and potentially another one or two maybe on the way. Obviously, keep plugged into Sooners Illustrated, but we'll discuss that later this week, kind of all the recruiting happenings. Tom and I will circle back maybe Monday, unless I'm still in
Warren. We'll go Tuesday again.
To wrap up the Super Regional, Oklahoma and Kansas, and obviously we'll hit on some other football stuff as we start to get into the dog days of the summer, getting a little closer to media days and fall camp and all that stuff coming up later on here in the next couple of months. So that's it for now. For Tom Green, I'm Josh Calloway. We'll see you next time right back here, as always, on Sooners Illustrated.